it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I love that discussion that we had on yesterday's show where we learned that both Anna and Steven had never seen The Godfather. I got so many emails after the show, so many people tweeting at me, messaging me, saying, are you kidding me? You haven't seen The Godfather? That's a rite of passage movie. You need to see The Godfather.
I apologize to everybody out there.
You should.
I do.
It's a sin. It's a rite of passage. Our next guest is the sports director at KXLY News in Spokane. Whole lot of news in Spokane last night as Gonzaga knocked off UCLA 79-76. Instant classic. Great game. Joining us from Vegas, Julian Menonsone, previously in Eugene, now in Spokane, is the sports director at KXLY. And what's the scene in Vegas today?
Man, it's kind of the like a lot of people who go to Vegas, the recovery day from the night before. That is kind of the scene right now. I mean, we're here at the media availability. I'm actually at T-Mobile Arena. We just spoke with some of the Gonzaga players, and it's just kind of, they're still kind of reeling off of last night. A lot of everyone was in awe of what that game was. It was one of the games of the tournament. Definitely provided one of the better performances of the tournament, and Drew Timmy, and probably the shot of the tournament and finish of the tournament with that Julian Strother three. Totally unbelievable.
Are the players, like, you know, I always wonder after a game like that, kind of the emotional toll. Did they show up sluggish or energized today, or do you get a sense of, will there be a hangover from what was a very emotional game?
Well, it's funny you say that, because Strother was the first person we talked to today, and he was like, I had to turn off my phone because he had so many missed calls and messages last night just to get to bed, not even just to talk to anybody, just from the simple fact of staying off Twitter as well, because he said he was just going to be watching his own shot over and over again. So they kind of had to force themselves to go to sleep just to get enough rest to practice today, because obviously the bounce back, you got to prep for a very tough UConn team. So it seemed like today that they're well rested. They're kind of ready to go. And when you have guys like a Strother or a Timmy who've been a part of these games, and they were part of the Jalen Suggs shot in Indianapolis against UCLA 2 years ago. So they're kind of used to that. And, you know, Mark Few's, I don't think, going to let them celebrate too long. So it looks like they'll be ready to go.
They're down 13 at the midpoint of last night's game. And, you know, but UCLA playing shorthanded, I kind of wondered, did you get a sense in watching the game, how much of last night's outcome was UCLA kind of running out of gas and playing too many minutes?
Yeah, I think part of it was that. I mean, 13, even with shorthanded, 13 against UCLA, the way they play defense, might as well be 20 sometimes. But Gonzaga, this entire season, and particularly these last couple games here in the NCAA tournament, they have been a very, very potent second-half team. And you kind of felt that there was going to be a run coming. And if UCLA could kind of keep it at bay and not let it get out of hand, that they were going to win that game up 13 already, because that team does not really, give away leads too easily. But I think a lot of the sense, of, at least from the Gonzaga fans that were there, they've kind of seen this story before with other games this season, coming back from a lot of points down. They've done it a number of times throughout the regular season. Again, like I said, in the NCAA tournament. And it was just kind of a matter of time before they made finally a push. And ultimately, it got to that ending that was pretty crazy, because then UCLA retook the lead. And the roller coaster of emotions, I think, was just from both fan bases next to each other was something to see for sure.
Yeah, give us an idea, because you're in the building. You're in T-Mobile Arena. You know, we've seen that building a lot in the Pac-12 tournament. But just to see that unfolding and maybe the timeout before, you know, the last shot of the game and, you know, kind of how it unfolded. What was that like for you to be in that building covering that thing?
It was unlike anything I've ever experienced. And look, I mean, you mentioned it. I used to obviously work in Eugene and covered a couple tournaments with Oregon and Oregon State. And this is my first tournament covering Gonzaga. And that was probably the most crazy atmosphere than I've ever been a part of, at least for an NCAA tournament game. And I think at least for the Gonzaga side, because that's kind of the side where the press side that I was sitting closer towards. I think a lot of them started replaying in their head. You could kind of see the shock on their faces when they gave up a lead that they came back from. I think they kind of were thinking, oh no, is this Heartbreak City 2.0? I mean, is this, you know, is a 17-year anniversary to the day of that Adam Morrison game, and they gave up that huge lead to UCLA. And this one, a little bit different story. They had to come back, but they were up, you know, 10 points in those final minutes, and they give it up, and you kind of see their on their faces like, oh my gosh, not again. And then UCLA takes the lead, and the Bruins fans, who were pretty quiet because UCLA couldn't hit a shot for, you know, 10, 11 minutes in that game. And they were relieved. And then Strother hits a jump shot and puts them up. And it was really the, you know, they call it like a tale of two halves. This is really like a tale of 2 minutes in that final sequence there, because the ups and downs and emotional roller coaster was pretty crazy in it. But it's what March Madness is all about, you know.
Julian Minnison in Spokane now as the sports director at KXLY News. Mick Cronin, the UCLA coach, after the game, a different kind of emotion there. Did you get a sense of the disappointment? Was there whining going on? What was going on with Cronin last night? I kept seeing stuff on social media.
Yeah, you know, after the game, he had a comment about how long he had to kind of wait about 33 minutes just to get to the press conference. And he thought that was kind of ridiculous. He said that. And then he didn't have necessarily the most thorough or longest answers for some of the questions that were asked. I think someone asked, you know, what was the game plan going in against Drew Timmy? Because obviously Timmy had a great game, and he just said our game plan was to try our best. And so, obviously, you know, in an emotional game like that, one that you feel like you had, especially up 13, and then one you feel like you had again going up in the final minute there, you know, it's going to be upsetting. And you know, they were one of the better teams in the tournament. Both teams probably were playing at a Final Four level at times last night, and they ultimately came up short. And he's probably thinking as well, look, you lost to this Gonzaga team by 20 in the same building last year. You lost in a similar heartbreaking fashion to this Bulldog team again in the Final Four 2 years ago. And so he's probably sitting there like, man, what do I have to do to beat these guys? And so I think you saw some of that frustration come out last night. And you know, I don't blame him for it. I understand it's a high-pressure situation, the biggest stage, and his team ultimately came up short in a very emotional and close game, which is sometimes the worst way to lose.
Yeah, and look, here's the other thing. I mean, it was a great game, and I think you got to tip your cap to both teams. I thought Jaime Jaquez was fantastic. I'm going to miss seeing him in the tournament, but Drew Timmy was something else. You've seen Timmy all year. How close to at his best was he last night?
That last night was probably one of the better tournament performances that I've ever seen live from anybody, just from the simple fact that not only could he get whatever he wanted and the full repertoire was on display, but the fact that in the first half, he really had to carry that team because nobody was doing anything on the offensive side of the ball other than him in that first half. And it kind of felt like, uh-oh, is he going to have to play this entire game just to keep this boat afloat? But once they got a couple guys going, that's really all they needed to make the comeback. But I'll say it again. I mean, I would put him probably as the best Gonzaga player in the Mark Few era, just from what he's accomplished. I mean, he's gotten 10 games now. He has more 20-point games in the NCAA tournament than any college player ever. And you think about how many games he's kind of left on the table from the COVID year as well. And so just to think about all he's accomplished, you know, three-time All-American, I think that if there were any doubts of kind of the player that he is and that maybe potentially he could be at the NBA level. I mean, last night it was just a masterclass of footwork and touch at the rim and his ability to feel a defender. It was unbelievable to see.
Pro Gonzaga crowd in Vegas last night, it looked that way on TV, but you're in the building. Do you feel like there were more Zags fans than UCLA fans?
You know, it's interesting because, like, pregame and leading up to it, the few days leading up to it, I saw a lot more Bruin fans out and about. But I think part of that was maybe because UCLA fans maybe came to Vegas and not necessarily went into the arena. They maybe just came to hang out and party and kind of tailgate and watch the game. But, yeah, it was a little bit more Gonzaga, especially sprinkled throughout the crowd aside from the main sections behind each team's respective bench. And that's not surprising at all either, just because, you know, like we mentioned before the game when I was on the show, just kind of the fortunate nature of being able to get in the West region and get to Vegas when they were projected to go maybe east or to the Midwest, it gave Gonzaga fans maybe – the leeway to say, okay, if I was on borderline coming to the game and I didn't know if I was going to travel for the NCAA tournament, I am now. And, you know, they've made it a habit here to come to Vegas. You know, they played the WCC tournament at the Orleans, not too far away from T-Mobile. And there's a lot of success here for this team every year. So not surprised by, the amount of Zags fans that came out, even though they're not as close as Los Angeles is for UCLA.
UConn on Saturday. Big matchup. UConn looks scary right now. They're playing great basketball. You've seen them up close. One of the benefits, I think, of being there in person is these games will be played in a, you know, back-to-back fashion, and you get a chance to hear the news conferences. What are your impressions of UConn?
They're going to be tough. I mean, the analytics, first of all, love them. They're one of the top teams in KenPom, I believe, heading into the tournament. And they have the exact kind of roster that gives Gonzaga some fits. You kind of saw it with when Gonzaga played Purdue and Zach Edey earlier this season, just big bodies on the front line bother Gonzaga because past Drew Timmy on that front line, there isn't much, not only scoring, but just depth in general. And UConn has big dudes, big, long, athletic guys on that front line that could maybe at least give him a little bit more trouble than a shorthanded UCLA could. And that's kind of been the discussion for both teams today is how is Gonzaga going to handle a team like UConn? And after Timmy's performance last night, do they feel well-equipped to handle what Timmy's going to throw at them? So that's going to be kind of the big tick-for-tack that we're going to see, I think, in tomorrow's game. But it should be a good one. I know UConn is favored by two, which really doesn't mean anything. That's more or less a pick'em game as well. So that's going to be one of the big storylines to see. It could come down to once again, if Gonzaga is going to get any supporting cast at all, because if Timmy has any semblance less of a game than he had yesterday, Gonzaga is going to need some help behind him for sure.
Julian Mendenson is our guest. He's joining us from Vegas, KXLY TV in Spokane. Are you having fun? Like, you know, you go from covering Oregon, it's very pro football, you know, program, and, you know, in the state of Oregon, we talk college basketball, we talk the Blazers. Now you're in Spokane where basketball is king, and it's a year-round thing.
Yeah, you know, it's totally different. I had a ton of fun in Eugene for sure because I think there's no place, you know, like Autzen, of course, to watch a college football game, at least on the West Coast. But being here in Spokane, at Hooptown, USA, and I'm a big basketball guy. Look, I played basketball all the way through my freshman year of college, and so it is my favorite sport to cover. March Madness is my favorite sporting event throughout the year. Since I was little, I would always fill out brackets and you know, sit with my dad on the couch and watch these games from day to night. And I think as I've gotten to actually work these tournaments and not watch them as a fan, you kind of get – it's hard, you know, John, it's hard to get caught up and not in the work and not necessarily enjoy the moment and kind of just sit back and relax and just be aware of your surroundings and where you are. But I think last night was just kind of the – epitome of why we do what we do and why I love it so much. It's because it's about the people in this tournament. Like, where else can you see a shot like Julian Strother hit that shot in his hometown against the team that they've had so many great classic moments in the past with family and friends watching. You know, where else can you see a moment like that and be able to root for somebody like that? Or a team like Fairleigh Dickinson, like we saw, where a team that you didn't even see on, or know where to point out on the map. And all of a sudden you're enamored by these guys. So, I still think it's the greatest month of sports for sure. And, I think I'm enjoying it a lot more than maybe I did at the start of my career, for sure.
Yeah, have fun with this one. Again, for people just tuning in, Gonzaga and UConn on Saturday, Final Four at stake. Julian, in the background of all of this, I'll let you go after this question. Some talk about whether or not Gonzaga stays in the WCC. I lean toward believing that Gonzaga will stay right there. They can win a national championship in that conference, but I don't blame them for kicking the tires. What's your sense in being around the program of where they fit in college basketball?
Well, I think so far, they've created a home here in the WCC. They're obviously the cash cow of the conference. As we've seen this year, they can still compete in the tournament at a high level by just scheduling really tough non-conference games. And the WCC is much improved. Gonzaga lost some games in the conference this year, which doesn't happen every day. Now, with that being said, the athletic director, Chris Staniford, and Mark Hugh, they've all said that they're just going to do what's best for Gonzaga. And I think, obviously, there's, as we've seen with a lot of the relocation and conference realignments and from other schools that are going up to other conferences and bouncing around, there's a lot to unpack there with the factors that go into making those decisions. So as of right now, it seems like Gonzaga's happy. They got a new WCC commissioner, Stu Jackson, and we'll see how he handles the WCC conference. So as of right now, if Gonzaga keeps competing and beating these teams and winning these NCAA tournament games and being one of the most successful programs in this tournament over the last decade, then, what would be the reason to move other than maybe a little bit more money, maybe from, let's say, another TV deal in, let's say, the Big East or the Big 12?
Yeah, I appreciate you, Julian. Thank you for joining us. Have fun in Vegas.
Thanks, John. Anytime.
All right, there he is. You can see him on TV in Spokane. Julian Menison joining us. I'm kind of with him on Gonzaga. Like, Gonzaga hired a firm called Endeavor to help them explore the possible realignment, expansion, movement to another conference. Like, this is not a secret. I think they're kicking the tires on the Big East. They're listening to the Big 12, but I don't think they really love the idea of going to the Big 12. Big 12 may invite them. I'm not sure I believe that Gonzaga will accept that invitation. Currently, basketball only worth about 15 to 20 cents of every media rights dollar. So if you're looking at basketball in the Big 12, you're talking $6 to $7 million in media rights value. Gonzaga is doing better than that right now in the WCC, and they don't have to play Kansas. They don't have to play Texas Tech and Baylor and Houston. They can just walk every year to a, one seed, two seed, three seed. What's a down year for Gonzaga? Maybe they're a four seed. If I'm Mark Few in Gonzaga, of course you want to be loved. You want to poke around. You want to see, hey, is anybody going to, throw a ridiculous offer at us? But I kind of think Gonzaga is going to stay right where they are. Stay right where you are. Anna pops into the studio next. We're going to play What's Your Peeve, among other things. Leave it here.
That is Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Anna's popping into the studio. I always say that because that's what you did. You popped into the studio. You literally popped right into the studio. How you doing?
Makes it sound like I'm like hip-hopping into the studio.
Yeah, you just kind of jump through the door like Kramer.
Like Kramer.
Kramer on Seinfeld. Yeah, you come through the door. It's Friday. We're going to play What's Your Peeve coming up.
It's Friday?
Not in this segment, but in the next segment.
Okay.
People can start lining up at 503-417-7575. I gather you're going to have a peeve. You do every Friday. I want our listeners to weigh in as well. We should give away a prize for whoever has the best peeve. But mm-hmm. I actually think talking about your peeve is the prize.
It's cathartic.
Remember, we've had some people over the years who call in and just, you can tell they're just, they need to talk. They need to get it off their chest. Yeah. This is like free therapy
yeah.
on the show.
We're trying to prevent violent crime here.
Hey, there was a big debate today on radio in Miami as Dan Le Batard had Stephen A. Smith on his show. And Dan Le Batard said that he's mad at Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless for sort of perpetuating the genre of arguments on television as this is what sports debate is. This is what sports journalism on television is mm-hmm. in today's world. On one hand, I understand that it's entertainment. And nobody, like, there's nothing entertaining about seeing two people go, hey, what do you think of this? I agree. Yeah. Nobody wants that.
Right.
What they want on television is they want the quintessential argument. They want arm waving. They want conflict. And to the point where, like, they manufacture the conflict. Like, you know, it's over the top, right? We all know that. And it's opinionated, it's edgy, it's over the top.
When we asked the question about how does Kyrie Irving look, he doesn't look good. He can give out his tweets and he can talk about thank you to Brooklyn or whatever. You know what? A real thank you would have been showing up so they could see you at the Barclays Center the most nights. But unfortunately, throughout your 3+ year tenure in Brooklyn, that was not the case.
And he's not the only offender. Skip Bayless, remember Skip Bayless, loves some conflict. He gets some attention and eyeballs on his show.
If you make enough goofy predictions, odds are that eventually you're going to get one right.
You're right.
So Charles had predicted that Portland would win game one.
Right.
And now he has quadrupled down
Sweet.
That Portland will sweep your Los Angeles Lakers. And I say you better gloat while you can. Nostrachukus, because it ain't going to last much longer.
All right, so this is the genre.
Mm-hmm.
It's not journalism, but Dan Le Batard says, look, you guys are journalists. What happened to you? I blame you. There's a bunch of wannabes that will perpetuate this and copycat you, and this is what television's become. Do you blame the people on TV, or do you blame TV, or do you say, hey, this is just entertainment?
I blame the political shows because I think they're taking a page out of like those contentious Sunday morning talk shows that have to do with politics.
Like and, Meet the Press?
Yeah, Meet the Press. Or, you know, the one with this week with George Stephanopoulos, you know, or probably the ones that have more vitriol, frankly. And so I think they've seen, you know, everybody seems to want to be the 20-second video clip on Twitter, and what better way to be the 20-second video clip than to have something contentious or fiery to say that somebody else vehemently opposes?
All right, so where do you stand on this, though? Is it entertainment? Is it journalism? What is it?
Oh, I think it can be highly entertaining because what is it aimed at, really? It's aimed at engagement. So it's aimed at an audience that will either side with one guy or they'll side with the other guy or they'll form a third or fourth or fifth opinion and offer that. And so I don't know how much of it is journalism. I don't mind the discourse, but I do mind the puppetry where it feels like if it's too orchestrated and too manufactured just for the point of disagreement at a loud or snarky tone, then I feel a little manipulated as a member of the audience.
But you know how reality television, you and I have talked about, like, what is scripted, what is not. How much of reality television, how much of The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, how much of the shows that we watch that we think are, hey, just they've got a camera and they're in a house and this is all natural conflict. How much of that do you think is geared at, you know, is manipulated and is scripted?
Come on. We know that's highly produced. We know that's highly scripted. We know that the producers are creating scenarios in which conflict occurs. We know that they're keeping the baddie around just to stir the pot and make life uncomfortable for, you know, the other people that are involved in a show like that. But that's just kind of the world in which we live right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But I also, I don't blame him because it turns me off too. And I think too much of that argumentative stuff, it's not smart enough for me. Like, I can see when Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharpe are arguing, I can see the producers in the background going, yeah, you should say this, you should say that, or you should say that, or you guys don't agree on this, you guys. And a lot of it feels over the top and fabricated. I much prefer a nice natural disagreement. Mm-hmm. Like, I find it really entertaining when two people who have dissenting viewpoints, who are both smart people, are arguing about something they care about.
Yeah.
Not what I don't find interesting is when two people who are, you know, being used as puppets, so to speak, by the producers are having a disagreement, and you can tell they're engaged in a debate that they're only halfway and emotionally invested in.
Is that because I haven't heard or seen much of those? I kind of tune out when I see those kind of disagreements.
Why?
Because it's almost like it's a red flag to me that there's something about it that doesn't ring authentic to me.
That's what I'm talking about.
And so I just don't even watch it. So you're saying that you feel like it is very much manufactured?
And I actually don't think most of it is valuable to society. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a certain value that we all get in hearing a quality debate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why people tune in to see the presidential debate. They want to see, who are these people? What do they stand for? How do they handle themselves in a difficult situation? But I'm not getting quality debate on those shows. I'm getting manufactured debate between two people who are acting. They're acting out the parts of, hey, I really care about this. I care about that. And I don't want that. That's the part that I back away from, and I go, they're just caricatures. Mm-hmm. They become cartoon characters after a while. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge is, and I think it's why a voice like J.J. Redick, I think, has emerged in that space as kind of a voice of reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't always agree with him, but I think he generally comes from a place of, hey, I was a player. This is how it really is. I'm sick and tired of the noise, because it is noise that's around there. And Stephen, correct me if I'm wrong, like J.J. Redick, as you listen to him, I find him to kind of be the voice of reason sometimes in those arguments.
Yeah, he's a very, again, you know, he went to Duke, very educated, but like he comes from a place where he got along with a lot of the players, whether it's star players or role players, and he really comes across as he knows what he's talking about. So like he does have one of the more powerful voices, especially in the basketball community now, and he's coming from a place where it's a different angle that, you know, people aren't necessarily talking about. It's so long with these argue shows, it's easy to be like, oh, well, they have a ring, they don't have a championship. That's not all what basketball is about. I think JJ's really putting that at the forefront.
I want you to leave it here. I want you to start lining up as well. If you've got a peeve, something you want to get off your chest,
we interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.